Welcome back to a session we shouldn't actually be doing. This is called European Works Council's Brexit and EWCs. And of course, we shouldn't have to do this session because, well, quite frankly, anybody who's ever read our Brexit blog, and you know where to find them, knows that we think that Brexit is not a rational economic decision and not a good decision for the UK to have made, and the problems it creates and will continue to create are just not worth it. You know, we've never been able to see, quite frankly, any economic upside to Brexit. Sure, I know that people tell us that Brexit is all about restoring British sovereignty, which was never lost in the first place. But you know something, you know, do you ever try to go down to a supermarket and spend sovereignty? Say to the people on the cash desk, hey, you know what? See this big basket of groceries? I'm giving you 2 units of sovereignty for you. See how that works. But anyway, that's a biased Irish view about Brexit. And what I really want to talk about in this session is Brexit and European Works Councils, because there are implications and there are issues, and issues that companies have to address. And, you know, what's today, the 9th or 10th of October, as I record this, we've only got 2.5 months left until the UK leaves the single market, and you know, legislation, European Union legislation, stops applying in the UK as European legislation. What is Brexit? It's a decision taken by the British people in 2006, narrowly, has to be said, for the United Kingdom to leave the European Union. Now, a bit like the Paul Simon song that there's 57 ways to leave your lover, there were probably 57 ways for the UK to leave the European Union, but it took the hardest of hard decisions, which was to leave the European Union completely, i.e. not only to leave the political European Union, but to leave the single market and the customs union as well. In doing this and taking that decision and going down that road, in asserting that, you know, above all else, sovereignty was to be the issue in play, the UK is putting itself outside of the framework of European law and outside the jurisdiction of the Court of Justice of the European Union. Of course, Brexit will also make it much more difficult for UK citizens to live and work in the EU, and that has implications for European Works Councils. You know, and that's what we're going to look at in this module. What does all of this mean for European Works Councils? Well, the first point, the most important point, is that after midnight Brussels time, 11 o'clock London time, on the 31st of December of this year, 2020, it will no longer be legally possible to base European Works Councils in the UK, because the UK will be outside the EU's legal framework. For instance, what would that mean in practice? If there was to be a dispute between the EWC and management, then there have been such disputes. Look at the most recent report from the Central Arbitration Committee on the number of EWC disputes it's dealt with over the last year. You know, that dispute could not ultimately be resolved by the Court of Justice of the European Union, because the UK would be outside the jurisdiction of the European Court. And therefore, you know, suppose a dispute arose, you know, in relation to something in France or Spain, it just can't be resolved in the UK court. Ultimately, it has to have access to the Court of Justice of the European Union, and that will no longer be possible. You know, quite simply, to put it bluntly, UK jurisdiction stops at the UK-EU border, and there will be one. Okay? There will be such a border as from the 1st of January of next year. Now, there are two types of EWC is based in the UK, they're going to need to find a new legal home. If you can't be based in the UK, well, then you have to be based somewhere else. Okay? Of course, the first one is those UK headquartered companies that have been subject to UK law and therefore have had their UK base, their EWC based in the UK. Yeah? Plenty of such companies come to mind. Boots, for instance, Alliance Boots, which is a UK based company, or Marks and Spencer's, or, you know, Rolls-Royce, for instance. But there are also the non-EU headquartered companies that have based their EWC in the UK. For the most part, American, but there have been Japanese and Canadians and Australians and so on Right? They're going to have to go somewhere else. Like all things EWC, while there are no precise figures available, my own estimate is there could be as many as 200, probably somewhere between 150 and 200 that will need to find a new legal home as in from December the 31st next. Look, we've already talked about this in the opening module where we talked about where do you base an EWC if you have a choice to do so. You know, and for me, the location of choice is Ireland. Again, let me repeat, it's not just because I'm Irish. I spent years telling people to put their EWCs in the UK. But why Ireland? Because of language, you know, legal system, supportive business environment, and a welcoming political framework as well. You know, Ireland is not hostile to business. And that's an important consideration when you're looking at where do you go. Why language? Do you want to be in court? Do you want to be in court? You know, try to deal in a language that you don't understand, working through interpreters, you know. So whether it's Ireland or elsewhere, the companies that have to move fall into two categories. There are those who operate under the subsidiary requirements and are free to switch at any time they want, as was made clear by the Central Arbitration Committee in the HPE case. You know, in HPE, the management decided to switch from the UK to Ireland during the SMB process. And the reason they did so wasn't capricious. It was because they were anticipating Brexit. And they said, look, we've got this SMB process running. By the time we get to the point of either having or not having an agreement, the UK will have left the European Union. Why would we continue to negotiate, you know, under the legal framework of a country which says it's leaving the European Union, where, you know, we're going to reach an agreement or not reach an agreement at the point when it's leaving? Let's move now. Let's go to Ireland. And the SMB, advised by English union experts, challenged this decision. And the CAC ruled in management's favour completely. At the same time, a similar case was running in Germany, not quite the same, involving DXC or CSC, which is now part of DXC. And again, the German courts ruled more or less in line with the way the CAC ruled in the UK. And a key decision in the CAC judgment in the UK was a Poldbud decision. Now, Poldbud has nothing to do with European Works Councils. Poldbud was a Polish company that decided that for business reasons, perhaps tax reasons, it wanted to re-register in Luxembourg as instead of Poland. And the Polish Commercial Court said, well, if you want to do that, you have to deregister and sort of in Poland. You can no longer have a presence here. And they challenged that because what they wanted to do was to move their head office from Poland to Luxembourg, but not their operations. And the matter eventually ended up at the European Court of Justice. And the European Court of Justice ruled in favour of Poldbud and simply said that this is one of the founding principles of the European Union, freedom of establishment. A company can set itself up anywhere it wants, for whatever reason it wants. And that was quite a critical factor in the HPE decision. So if you're operating under the subsidiary requirements, then you can move to wherever you want to move out of the UK at any time you want. However, if you have an agreement, things may not be quite so simple. See, an agreement is a contract signed between two parties. And normally that contract will say that this contract is subject to the jurisdiction of a particular country. And it's not open during the lifetime of a contract for one party to the contract to unilaterally decide that it's moving the contract to a different jurisdiction. That's just the way the law of contracts works. There has to be a degree of mutuality involved in it. However, at midnight Brussels time, the 31st of December 2020, the UK ceases to be a valid jurisdiction. You know, you can no longer base your EWC in the UK as and from that moment in time. And therefore, it has always seemed to us, and we've never seen any opinion from unions or legal advisors to the contrary, that at that particular point in time, The situation reverts to Article 3.6 of the directive, which allows non-EU headquartered companies to decide on an appropriate jurisdiction. So jurisdiction A at that point in time is no longer valid, then management, then the right to nominate an alternative jurisdiction reverts to management. So what we advise, what we suggest, is that management forms its EWC so that there's no dispute about, you know, moving a contract from one jurisdiction to another, that management informs its EWC that as of from midnight December 31, 2020, when the UK is no longer a valid jurisdiction, that management has appointed a representative agent in an alternative jurisdiction, whatever that jurisdiction is going to be, so that this matter happens automatically. Because if you don't do that, you don't do that, as we saw in the session on the special negotiating bodies, if you don't do that in the first instance, then you will automatically default, or could automatically default, to the jurisdiction in which you have the biggest facility in terms of employee numbers. So, you know, today you're under the UK. Tomorrow, because you have 3,000 people in the shared services centre in Romania, that's where you are. And let me tell you, nobody knows what the Romanian law means. You're better off being in Ireland. Make a decision and be proactive. Be proactive about it. Which brings us to the second issue. Can UK representatives continue to sit on EWCs? In my view, the bottom line is no, they can't, because the UK has become a third country. It is no longer part of the European Union, European Economic Area, legal ecosystem. And only employees in the EU, EEA, European ecosystem, legal ecosystem, have the right to sit on European Works Councils. So they lose that right. Russia isn't in the EU's legal ecosystem. We don't have Russian representatives on EWCs. America isn't in the EU EEA's legal ecosystem. We don't have Americans on European Works Councils. You know, the UK puts itself in the same third country position as the US, Russia, and all the rest. So therefore, in my view, the legal right automatically disappears as of from midnight on the 31st of December, 2020. Now, you may have included wording in an agreement which allows representatives from the UK to sit on your EWC, perhaps in the short term, perhaps until the end of a particular mandate or so on. So check the wording of your agreement. You know, look at what it says. You know, but in my own view, in the long term, they have no such legal rights. But I've been involved in debates with Baird members of, should they stay or should they go? So, case for staying, should they stay? The UK is a big and important country. We should have representation on our European Works Council. UK representatives have been constructive members of the EWC. Why would we want to kick them off? We don't want the disruption or the hassle of dropping them. Their colleagues like them. Yeah. They don't want to see them go. For UK-based companies, it's their home market. We can't exclude our home market employees, and that's entirely understandable. Yeah. And again, who knows what might happen in the future? Maybe the UK will be back into the EWC before you know it. And so, you know, why disrupt yourself in the short term when we might have to reintegrate them just a couple of years down the road? Oh, by the way, I don't think that's going to happen. But much and all as I would like it to happen, I don't think it's going to happen. Go. Case for go. We think European Works Councils should be strictly limited to EU, EEA countries. The UK decided to leave. It wasn't kicked out. It wasn't forced out. No, it was a choice of the British electorate. Therefore, it puts UK employee representatives outside of the scope of European Works Councils. The law is as the law is. Keeping UK representatives creates precedent for other non-EU countries, especially countries looking to join the EU, Turkey, Ukraine, for instance, Morocco. you know. And if you bring in representatives from a country that has left the EU, why not any other country? Why not the US, for instance? You know, okay, I know the US is not in Europe, but legally speaking, the UK and the US will have the same legal standing vis-a-vis the EU after the 31st of December next, i.e. they will both be regarded as what the EU calls third countries. What happens in exceptional circumstances? You know, think about this. How many of you guys listening to this may or may not be planning to move operations out of the UK and into the European Union because of Brexit? Yeah. Does that, if you keep UK representatives on your EWC, would that count as an exceptional circumstance? Would you have to consult about that, inform and consult about that? They're the sort of practicalities that we're looking at. What happens if there's a dispute involving the UK? You know, for instance, take that. We're moving stuff out of the UK because of Brexit. We're moving it into France, Spain, Hungary, Poland, wherever. Right? And it's disputed. You know? Can a court in the EU, whether it's the Irish Labour Court or a court in France or Spain or Belgium or whatever, can it take into consideration issues that are happening in a non-EU country? I don't know the answer to that, but I know it'd be complicated and difficult. And do you want to put yourself into that complicated and difficult position? Yeah, and finally, people say to me, look, Tom, we know that our UK representatives have been good and constructive and positive, but we can't let sentimentality cloud our judgment. We have to do the right thing in the long term. So ultimately, each company has to make its own decision in the light of its own history, culture, context, and its own approach to employee relations, you know. But it does seem to me to be wise that if companies do decide to keep their UK representatives under EWC, that there are lines of demarcation and that they're clear about whether or not events and decisions in the UK count in relation to transnational and exceptional circumstances matter. You know? For example, ask yourself the question, would you include a decision in Turkey or Ukraine in an exceptional circumstance? And if the answer to that question is no, then that has to be the answer to the UK as well. And of course, there's also the possibility that in the years ahead, immediately ahead, I mean, the whole purpose of Brexit is to allow the UK to diverge from European Union laws. And what happens if it diverges from laws, for example, on collective redundancies or transfers of undertakings or whatever? How complicated does that make life in terms of exceptional circumstances? And there's other considerations that need to be kept in mind. As of from the 1st of January next, UK subjects will no longer be EU citizens. Could be outside the framework of European law. They'll lose freedom of movement rights. It'll become more difficult for them to work in the EU, even on a short-term basis, you know, unless there's an agreement between the UK and the EU to the contrary. And at the moment, who knows? Who knows? You know, EWC meetings are work. They fall within the ambit of whatever rules govern this in the future when it comes to EU citizens working and coming to the EU. Now, none of this may matter if EU meetings continue to be run virtually as of now, but that may not always be the case. We may well go back to, at some point in the next year or two, having in-person meetings. A UK EWC member coming to a meeting in, let's say, Amsterdam may well be regarded as an intra-company transfer in the short term, or at any rate, they're not earning any extra money by coming to the meeting in Amsterdam. They'll be paying their normal salary and so on. UK trade union officials who act as experts could be regarded as visitors coming to a conference with their expenses paid by the host, and they could also be seen as representing trade union federations. Yeah. But what about paid British experts? Those that are actually earning money while in the EU that they would not earn if they were not there. They are actually exporting services across a border that previously didn't exist. That may require permission and relevant qualifications. But these, when you create borders, you need permission to cross borders. You need permission to sell across borders. And that raises questions around these issues. So So we also need to ask ourselves the question, is that if the UK becomes a third country and we continue to use UK experts, well, why not US experts? Yeah. Or whoever else, for that matter. What about confidentiality? If a non-EU expert were to break confidentiality, where would we hold that to account? What court? Where could we take them to law? Okay, I'm back here in the UK. You can't touch me. These are practical day-to-day considerations that raise your head. You know? It seems to me, at a minimum, that we should be, as we think about Brexit and EWCs, that we should be thinking about, at a minimum, saying that experts need to be EU citizens, accountable at EU law for their actions. So that's it. That's it. I walked through the subsidiary requirements and what's involved in setting up a European Works Council, and you know where we stand with our understanding of information and consultation. That's it. As of today, at any rate, the impact of Brexit and European Works Council. But you know, we're recording this on whatever date it is, the 9th or 10th of October, and you know, there's still 2.5 months to go, and things could change. But I don't see them changing dramatically. You know, hope these sessions have been of some use to you. You know, fully understand that they can't compensate for the type of conversation we could have in person, in the training room or over a coffee. You know, so if you do have questions, just email it and we can take from there. We can answer you by email or we can set up a chat with you. And hopefully you found this series useful. And if you have watched them all, thank you very much for doing so. See you soon. Bye.